Welcome to Mining Now. We have a first-time company being featured on the show today. It's a product that I knew absolutely nothing about, and I was the one who booked the show, so I had to spend a couple meetings just figuring out what they did, and it just gets more interesting as I go deeper and deeper, no pun intended. IPI Packers is on the show, Joel Adams. He is the Director of Mine, Water, and Geotech. And Ivan Kozorok, he is the Business Development of Mine, Water, and Geotech at IPI Packers. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jared.
Thanks for having us.
Let's start with Joel. Let's start with you. What is a Packer? let's start off with the right off the top, just high level, what are you delivering to the market?
So the Packer is basically very similar to a high-pressure hydraulic hose. We just build it wrong so that when you put pressure in it, it expands. It can expand, in some cases, up to three times its normal diameter, its at-rest diameter. And they're used in boreholes of all types. If you need to isolate a zone in a borehole for any reason, whether that's to pump grout in into a zone that's pushing groundwater into the hole, or if it's to take a water sample from an environmental well, or for hydraulic fracturing or plugging and abandoning wells. So any time you need to isolate a zone, a Packer is the tool to use.
When did they come into the industry? Have they been around? I know it's one of these things that, you know, I feel like I should know more about, but I just knew nothing about them before we met. How long have they been around?
They were originally developed in the 1940s in the oil and gas industry. I think the original patent was sometime in the 40s or 50s. There have been a lot of variations on that over time.
What is sort of IPI's, they're such a main player in this space. What is sort of their competitive advantage? Is it just the diversity of the product lines that you carry? Is it for any application, or what sort of gives you that edge in the market?
A lot of it's just the way that we actually manufacture the product. So there are various methods to build a Packer, and ours is a very robust, and it's also very scalable. So it's very easy for us to change the size of the Packer that we're using. If you look at some of the more standard Packers used in the oil field, for instance, they have three or four different sizes, and they have to do a whole new set of tooling in order to build a different size. And it's a big development product. The way that we build them, it's, as I mentioned, is very scalable, and we can make variations without having to go through a whole product development process.
Sorry for the very rudimentary questions, but I kind of wanted to understand a couple things, because you've got really good, and we'll put links to some of the videos that you have so people can watch them. We'll have them popping up on the screen here. But when the Packer gets inserted, and we'll go through some very specific ones that you have, are they... like the use cases, are they like, do people fill through the Packer? Are they blocking? What, like, again, just kind of go through again what they're actually used for in different applications. Is it always the same principle where they expand and then block a hole, or is there other cases where they're used to like provide like fill through them and stuff like that?
Ivan, you want to take that?
Yes, to your question, Jared. You know, for, you know, like why we're here at SME, there, as you're drilling or advancing drilling and like mineral coring exploration type projects, they'd be use our Packers to isolate a zone in order to try to analyze, you know, certain formations that they're going through, so they know how much water they're going to deal with once they're, you know, say it's an open pit mine or a tunnel, if they're sinking a shaft, our tool will isolate that part in the borehole, and so they can get water measurements and pressure measurements that can help them analyze their data once they actually, you know, start to open up the mine. So the Packer itself is just isolating the borehole. So if you were to pump water in the borehole without a Packer, it would just come out, you know, at the drill at the face of the borehole. So all it is a plug. And so you know, the way it works is, you know, all of our packers have an inner mandrel, and that's what, you know, is kind of the structure of the packer element, or the bladder, as a lot of people call it. And so the annular space between the rubber itself to the mandrel is what's filled with water or nitrogen. And that's the mechanism to expand the element.
So that's so actually kinda getting pumped in after you.
Yeah. So it's like a, think of it as like a Chinese finger trap. So as you expand it, it shortens. And then as you would like deflate the packer itself, it would re-elongate to its original resting diameter, like Joel mentioned earlier. And that's why our packers tend to be preferred over, you know, other types, just because it goes back to the resting diameter.
Let's talk about our heavy industry tour brought to you by Savannah Equipment, supplying mining equipment worldwide, and Geograph, solving customer challenges through innovation and design, higher performing parts, engineered solutions, on-time spare parts supply, and high-quality repairs. We are heading to events across North America and Australia and filming episodes on location. Email us at info@crownsman.com to be part of Crownsman's Heavy Industry World Tour. Orica Digital Solutions seamlessly connects customers' physical and digital worlds so they can readily understand and optimize operations at every step of the value chain, from exploration to processing. Whether deployed individually or as a whole, Orica Digital Solutions technologies deliver intelligence for open cut and underground mines to make more precise and faster decisions. With a complete, timely, and accurate picture, operations can adapt to improve safety, drive productivity, reduce costs, and environmental impacts. To learn more about Orica Digital Solutions, visit orica.com/digital solutions today. Brookville Equipment Corporation is a world-class American manufacturer specializing in underground mining and tunneling equipment for transportation of materials and personnel. Producing rail-mounted and rubber tire equipment, Brookville's vehicles are designed to meet the demanding needs of their customers' unique applications. Brookville also offers contract manufacturing solutions for your already engineered designs while fabricating it into a small component or a final product. You can see their full list of capabilities at brookvillecorp.com, or you can contact them at 814-849-2000.
So can you just sort of, go ahead, Joel, please.
And to your question, yes, you can. You can pump fluid once the packer is set and it's anchored against the borehole wall. In some cases, you'll pump fluid through it, or you'll pump fluid from below the packer up to the surface. And in some cases, it will act just as a plug, and you'll pour cement on top if you want to abandon the hole, for instance.
And so, you leave the packer down hole.
That's what I was going to ask you. So sometimes people are extracting it, but sometimes they're actually getting left in, right?
Yeah. So in like in a mining application, it might just be for water control, where you have an artesian condition. You need to kill the well. So you might install one of our packers and pump cement on top of it and leave the packer down hole. Then you just fill the rest of the hole with grout. And it's the same in the oil and gas. You know, our bridge plugs are, it's the same concept, but you might be doing it in casing and cementing on top of that and leaving our plug in the well permanently for good.
Joel, you mentioned that it's easily scalable. So is there is there 10 different product lines that you have? Is it one product that's just scalable? Like, what are some of the configurations? And if we want to be specific to mining, and either one of you can sort of answer this, and sort of walk through, like, we'll start with like exploration. What are the actual applications, and then what product line do you carry that matches up with this? Actually, Ivan, we can start with you on that one, because I know that's sort of your side.
Yeah, so our kind of cash cow would be our SWIPS. So it's a wireline deployed packer system for coring. And so as you're coring, you're extracting a core sample out, analyzing that, taking notes on what kind of formations you're drilling through and what horizons you might want to target for testing. And so the SWIPS is, you know, it's kind of the only tool like it that is, you deploy it through the bit, inflates, isolates your borehole for whatever testing you're doing, deflates, comes back through the bit, and then you advance drilling. So it's kind of our most important tool line in our mining side of things. And you know, we also sell low pressure packers, and those would be used for grouting. So for grouting jobs or water control, also used on dewatering projects. So we might have a couple different product lines used in one, you know, in one project.
Hey, mining enthusiasts, registration for CIM Connect 2024 Vancouver from May 12th to 15th is now open. Last year, this convention had over 6,800 participants from 60 countries, with 1,796 delegates, 702 booths, and 320 presentations. Secure your spot and register now at convention.cim.org. CIM Connect 2024, where quality and innovation define the experience. With Fender Dunlop, you know you are getting the best conveyor belting in the market. That's because they ensure the integrity of their conveyor belting by monitoring each step of the manufacturing process in their North American facilities. Focused attention is given to each belting order to guarantee that they produce a belt that will assist the customer in reducing operation costs, maximizing uptime, and improving revenue. Visit FenderDunlopAmericas.com to learn more.
Sorry, for the explanation, can you just... Could you just confirm on that again? So it's going into the drill hole.
Yeah. But through the drill bit.
Through the drill bit. So, but not your, it's actually within the, like the piping system of the drill, like of the diamond drill.
Yep. Yeah. So it goes through the drill rod. So it'll swim down through the drill rods, right in the same pipe that you're drilling with, same pipe that the drilling fluids are going down. And then, but in order to deploy our packet, you have to pull up the core sample. So a lot of these times, like you might run a 10 or 20 foot core barrel, and that would indicate you'd get a, you know, 10 or 20 foot core sample back to surface. So they're retrieving core, deploying our tool through the bit, performing the test they need to do, and then pull our tool out and then advanced drilling. So we call it progressive drilling, well, progressive testing while drilling.
And so they're using, when they're putting in it, what do they test? What would be an example of what they're testing for when they're doing that?
Permeability testing. So, you know, it's a basically step rate injection tests. So, you know, Lujan testing would be probably the most popular type. And, you know, that's kind of Joel's area expertise being a hydrogeologist. But that's, I would say that's majority of the tests that people would use the SWIPs for.
So what exploration companies have found that, you know, that they're going to do exploration holes to find out what the, you know, what their mineral targets are and what the mineral availability is. And they figured out that they can combine a geotechnical program with their exploration program, so they get the parameters for you know, how much water they can have flowing into the mine. So they're actually getting a double bang for their buck while they're doing their exploration drilling, and they're optimizing that by combining it with this. So basically their core is extracted using a core tube that locks into the core barrel. And then they run a wireline overshot down, they pull that core tube out, and our packer system is able to, once that core tube is out, to go back down and lock in just like the core tube does, except that our packer extends out the end of the bit. And that allows us to then basically isolate the bottom part of the hole below the packer and do that testing.
I wasn't quite clicking on that. So they're getting double value out of the borehole. They're using it to obviously extract for sampling, but then they're actually dealing with, like, yeah, water movement, structural, all that sort of stuff that they need to understand if the mine actually gets built, essentially.
Correct.
Yeah, right. Or expands, tunnel gets built, or yeah.
And that sort of moves us into the mine development. What specific applications would get used in the actual development of a mine?
So in the development, one of our biggest volume products is for block cave mining in Australia and in South America. There's a block cave mining technique. I'm not going to go into detail on that, but the rock has to be fractured up into fragments that are mineable, that work well with that technique. And basically they go in and they do hydraulic preconditioning. They can either go in with blasting and break up the rock, or they've found that they can use hydraulic fracturing to do the same thing. And it's a lot safer, no explosives being used. And so that's, for mine development, that's probably one of the major markets that we have.
And so which product line would that be? Would it be the same one, or is that a different product line for that?
We call that the DuraFrac high pressure packer system.
So how would this one get inserted then?
It's inserted from underground. And depending on the mine, it can be from surface or underground, but we'll take some of the copper mines in Chile. They actually go beneath the ore body and they drill holes up into it. And then they'll put the packer system from a drill rig inside the mine up to the top of the hole, and they'll basically create hydraulic fractures about every 1.5 meters coming down. So they're using very high pressure pumps and high volume pumps to propagate. Once they break the rock, they want to propagate that fracture, and they try to get it out in the sort of 70 meter radius, so that they get their borehole spacing correct.
Again, I'm sorry that I am not the, I was joking before that I could sell these now. I'm becoming more and more obvious that I couldn't. But the DuraFrac, when it goes in, what is its, and I know you've answered, but just to sort of clarify, what is its function within that borehole for the DuraFrac?
So the DuraFrac goes in what we call a straddle formation, straddle assembly, and it's basically two packers with a perforated zone between them, and the two packers basically isolate a small 750 millimeter zone, so that when you put the high pressure water in there to create the fracture, it's focused on a very small zone, and it creates the fracture right there. And it's basically layer caking the borehole with fractures.
So how many of these, let's say it's 100 feet, would you be putting multiples of these into that one hole?
You would use one tool to create multiple fractures. So one of the other real strong points of our equipment is reusability. So we get the durability of our packers, hence the name DuraFrac, is such that you don't have to change it. You can do maybe 100 separate frac treatments without having to change the actual rubber portion of the packer.
Just another thing that came to my mind, do you ever use your packers, or do you have packers? Like, if people don't want to, structurally, again, these questions, but structurally, if they don't want to, fill with grout and all that sort of stuff, do they ever use your packers? Is that an example where you could use it permanently? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Do people use it for that in the mining application?
There haven't been a lot of applications of that, but if someone has a problem, so say they unexpectedly, they're drilling an exploration hole and they unexpectedly hit a very high pressure, high flow water zone that could potentially, if they're doing the drilling underground, they could potentially flood the mine. They're going to need something to stop that flow, and a packer could be and has been used for that.
Yeah, so another use for a permanent install in mining application would be monitoring wells, where you have, say, a 1,200-foot well where you needed only the last 300 isolated. You would use a permanently installed packer that would just sit there inflated, and you might have a transducer hanging off the bottom of it where it was just taking pressure measurements from that part of the well. So that is another example of a permanently installed packer.
Do people that you're talking to, Joel, I think you alluded to this when we were doing intro calls about this. Like, you got someone like me this is all new, so I'm trying to absorb it. And you've got, by the way, your YouTube channel, kudos to whoever put that together, because you can actually go on and see how all this stuff works. Do most people you're talking to, though, do they have a pretty good understanding of the use cases and which application goes with what? Or is there still a lot of education that you need to provide?
It's highly variable. There are people that know exactly what they want and exactly what it needs to do, and there are people that, there's a lot of education and putting the boundaries on what is physically possible, what can be done, and maybe their initial idea is good, but maybe we have a better way to do it. And so I wouldn't call it education, but it's a discussion for sure.
Right behind you, you've got the standpipe. Is that have we already covered that, or is that a product that is that a new product? Is that, or is that just specific to the mining applications?
The technology is not necessarily specific to the mining industry, but the product itself, as it a standpipe, is specific. It's, you know, a standpipe. Some might call it an expandable drill collar. So it's an insertable piece of pipe that is permanently installed in a borehole. And so for this particular application, it's used in pre-excavation grouting and tunneling, where you'd be, you know, say a curtain grouting job where you'd use 10 to, you know, 18 standpipes. And in those standpipes, you have to grout everyone in place in a typical installation, where ours eliminates the first primary grout phase in installation. And so when you, as you're advancing a tunnel, you have, you know, you're, say it's a 20 or 40 foot kind of radius tunnel, you have to advance grout ahead of the tunnel if you're, you know, if you have a lot of water ingress. So in order to do that, you have to install, you know, pipes to direct the grout ahead of the tunnel. And as you do that, you might have, you know, half of them fail, and you won't know that until the, you know, until you're able to test it, which is 12 to 24 hours once the grout cures. And with ours, we can expand our standpipe right away. Within, you know, 3 to 5 minutes, you can be testing that standpipe rather than waiting 12 to 24 hours. And that's kind of the benefit, which is why we're here at SME pushing it.
So then this actually, right, I'm actually watching the video. And so then they, so this, in this case, this stays, the standpipe extension is permanent, right? It stays in there, and then they fill the grout in afterwards.
Yep, and then once they advance the tunnel, I mean, usually, you know, that'll get mined out later, whether it's, you know, blasted out or, you know, so once they're ready to advance the tunnel, these are just, you know, they're mined out, and that's it. So, consumable item.
So, again, people at walking around SME, do they walk by and go, oh, yeah, no, I know exactly what that is, and that's what's for? Or are people still like
Some
me
do.
Coming in going, how does this work?
Yeah, a lot of it's just trying to get the concept that we're actually expanding steel with a rubber, you know, high pressure hose, for lack of better words. So it's partially explaining that, and then getting folks to grasp the idea that we're expanding steel with water pressure.
What is the other way that you could do this?
You know, there's other types where, you know, either way, you're still going to need a pipe in the core hole. And so there's grout, standard grout, which I talked about, which takes time to, you know, takes time to set, and then you don't know if it actually worked until it's cured. And then the other option, it would be a resin, so a two-part resin epoxy that, you know, you still stick the standpipe in and then inject the resin around, and that sets pretty quick. But that's kind of the two other ones, and then now ours is kind of the next innovative technology for it.
But you're still kind of using this, you'd be using a two-step grouting system as opposed to one.
Yeah.
Or a two-step setting system. Joel, I want to talk a little bit more about just sort of the company and culture, and there's some things I want to get into, but I just want, what about the custom side of things? Do you, you know, there's a new need, something you haven't seen before. Is that sort of part of the business model, or is it like these are the products that you sort of have lined up for the market?
That's the fun part of the business model. And we pretty much started out 25 years ago. This is our 25th anniversary this year. So 25 years ago, we started out and building custom equipment for people as needed. And over time, some of that custom equipment evolved into standard pieces of equipment. For instance, the SWIPS was originally designed for a tunneling project in Europe about the year 2000. And we continue to do innovative custom things. And fortunately, we've also gotten to the point where we've got enough standard product where that creates the revenue that allows us to do that. It's a number of good things about that. One is that it keeps us who are doing the work very interested and excited about doing it. And it also gives us potential new revenue streams in the future. You never know which custom product is going to become the next standard product.
Where is your market Ivan, maybe I'll start with you, but then you can both talk about it. Like when we're talking about the markets you're pushing into, and it just makes me think of it when you're talking about doing custom, any sort of custom work, then of course the question is, well, where is this custom work? What is the business model and what are your markets? So are you dealing directly with the people actually putting it in the borehole, or is it through a distribution network? How do you deliver the products to the market?
We're, you know, primarily direct to consumer. So we'll, you know, we'll get an inquiry online and a group of us will answer and take it forth. But it's, you know, generally people know what they want, but it's also a consulting based sale. You know, you're not selling someone new tires for their car. You could be selling them custom tires for the car they don't have yet. So it's a wide range, I guess, pretty good breadth of our market. But we'll get big companies that will come in and say, hey, can you guys do this? Try this. We've tried other options in the past. And then all of a sudden we're making high volume products for them. I mean, so it's a hard one to answer.
a lot of our customers in the mining market are consulting companies. So they're large geotechnical, hydrogeological consulting companies. What used to be Goldern Associates, now a WSP, SRK, Pito and Associates, who are right next to us at the booth here, and quite a few others. And they're out on these projects doing the geotechnical evaluations. And so instead of us having to go out and market directly to a product, they are the ones that are selling their services and using our equipment doing it. So that's how we reach a lot of the market for our standard work. And for our custom stuff, it's we hope that somebody, you know, listens to this interview and says, wow, I need to talk to these guys.
So that, I guess that maybe to expand on that, who would be that person then? What type of person would listen to this interview and go, okay, this is applicable to me outside of like your standard, your consultings and that sort of thing?
We just had a very interesting visitor stop by who build drilling machines for space probes. And they include packers in those. And we've got an additional project where we are on a NASA proposal to NASA to do drilling on the moon and possibly Mars. So I wish I knew how to find those people, but basically we just have to let them find us because it's such a diverse school of people that we've had universities, we've had private companies come to us with really innovative ideas and say, you know, we don't know if you can do this, but could we give it a try? And so that's how we find our custom and innovative products.
What would be, do any examples come to mind when you say that, when someone comes and says, hey, we're thinking about doing, can we do something like this? Like what would be an actual, like sort of tangible example of that?
You want to talk about the expandable piles?
Yeah. We had a customer call in, well, about a year ago now. And it was it's for New Mexico State, and they called in wondering, you know, that they have an existing tool that expands steel for installing piles and for more civil jobs, construction, not necessarily a borehole. And he started talking to me about it, and he saw something online about swaging. And so we're talking more and more, and basically we're expanding a pile in situ in the ground, so that increases the anchoring force, compacts the soil around the pile to, you know, so they don't have to use this kind of archaic tool that they were using. And it was quick and easy, cheaper setup for them. And then Joel went down and did a demo with them, and we're continuing to work with them, and it's going really well. And they got what percentage increase in load capacity?
Yeah, a 2.5 times increase on their load capacity for the pile. So they're very excited about the research and the technology that they've got going, and we hope it goes commercial one day. But
and this is a scalable project too. So I mean, it's a scalable to a point where you just order a certain size pipe, and then we try to either use an existing packer for the expansion, or we'll build one. And that's what's, that's why we're where we're at, because we're good at doing that, I guess.
Well, like for the, for piles, are we talking like full size piles or?
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, so these are like 12 inch or I don't even know how big those are. Some of those are quite large.
The ones that the they've done the work on right now for the research are 6 inch.
6 inch. Okay. But theoretically, you could go bigger.
Yes. Yes. Oh, yeah.
Wow. What about in the mining space, like in underground applications? Is there a project that stands out that you kind of go, this is a good example of where one of the product lines we've discussed sort of fits in perfectly into a mining application?
Yeah, the standpipes. I mean, we were able to scale that to a larger size and able to put it into a 6 3/4 hole rather than 3.5 inch hole. And rather than kind of consumable production, I guess consumable from our perspective, where we're using, you know, multiple on a grout curtain, we designed one that was larger and installed in a deeper depth for water control. So in the event that they hit a water seam, they could easily shut it off, or at least easily control it. And so this one was at a potash mine, which is, so if you have a water ingress at a potash mine, that's, you know, fresh water. It's basically like salt. So fresh water and salt, you know, don't really go hand in hand in an underground mine. And so this one installed it at around 50 feet. And, you know, the expansion tool it we used was a custom made 10,000 PSI packer. And it took about 7,600 PSI to expand the standpipe, which same standpipe design as what we have, but it is essentially an expandable drill collar. And so that would have been something where we were able to take an existing product, bump it up a little to fit this project, and it was a really successful one. So
it's kind of an important distinction to make that says, you know, if someone goes on to your website, well, I think your website actually has a pretty good job of saying range, but it's just if somebody does go to check it out, it's not limited. You're not, it's not, oh, it has to be in a 3.5 inch or lower and stuff like that.
No.
That's just not
the setup. It might even be something where we just add more rubber to the outside of a packer. Or
right.
In this case, we took our Durafrac line, which is, you know, the similar to what we talked about earlier, but our 4.75 line of tooling. And we're like, well, why can't we just turn this into a 10,000 PSI tool? And so our engineering team were able to do that, and that's what made us, you know, successful with it, is because we can scale that packer size to whatever we need.
Joel, on the R&D side, I'm just wondering, is it like we've talked about the engineering side, I was just mentioning, does the company approach, do you look for opportunities, or is it sort of an approach where they're coming to you and then the engineering team steps in, or is R&D sort of an ongoing thing where you're trying to develop new products or customize products that might be able to scale up? Just sort of what's your approach to bringing new things to the market?
It's variable. So just as an example, I'm going to say 2010, 2011 decided we wanted to do more in the oil field space because that's the largest market out there for inflatable packers. And to do that, you need to increase your temperature capabilities and your pressure capabilities. And so we just started a program to start increasing the performance envelope of our packers into the oil field space. So that was very, very with intent. And we just did that step by step. And that's been extremely successful. On the other hand, sometimes we get a crazy inquiry. Right now we're doing a R&D project at the request of a Canadian mining company that's got a very unique approach to mining, and they need something packer-like as part of their process. And so they came to us. My first reaction is it's on the edge of possible. And so we've done some prototypes and it's actually been quite successful. So that's one that we had never imagined we would do, but somebody asked us.
Where does that approach come from though? Cause that doesn't, it doesn't sound like if you had said no, that's on the edge of impossible, so let's just fall on the impossible side. I don't think that would have put you out of business or anything like that. So that stands to reason that's sort of a cultural thing to sort of look for the yes. Is the company structured in a way that people can sort of share ideas, collaborative? What sort of drives that culture of sort of falling on the yes side when you're at that edge of impossible?
I probably have to say our founder, Clem Rowe, mechanical engineer. He's the guy that founded the company. He's always supported doing that sort of thing. Now our managing director in our Perth operation, Francis Ford, he's started in the company as an apprentice. He's now a shareholder and the managing director, and he's got that in his blood as well really, it's what keeps us interested, because I think once you're just doing the same thing over and over again, it's great for revenue, but it's hard to retain people, and we've done a great job retaining people and a team with a pretty good depth of knowledge.
How long have you been with IPI?
In one way or shape or form, since the beginning, 25 years. When Clem Rowe started the company, it was a one man operation. I was his largest customer, working for a small company in Switzerland. We did some development of specialized tools. Actually, the tool that created evolved into the SWIPS tool. Then eventually I came back to the States and kind of represented them as an agent, and then eventually decided to go full time and open a U.S. operation for them, North American operations.
And how about you, Ivan? You've been with them a while too, right?
Yeah, I joined IPI in 2012, and I kind of got word of mouth that Joel was looking to hire someone to help kind of start our branch in North America, and roundabout way, ran into him, hit him up on LinkedIn, and moved home, and 2 days later, I was on a plane to Australia for a few months to learn how all these are made.
Is the manufacturing and everything, just before we wrap up, is that all out of Australia, head office, and then like these are distribution, sales? How is that all set up for the North American market?
We have for North America, we're primarily just distribution and assembly, testing, training hub for North America. We have 5 people in Montana. And so most of our equipment's made in Perth, Western Australia, and then shipped, all around the world. And then we have another branch in Bulgaria that's making just our Packer elements for our, I think 5 or 6 different types of tools now, different sizes. And then, office in Sharjah, have an office in Santiago, Chile, and then Montana and Houston.
So the company has grown a little bit. Hey, Joel, since you started 25 years ago?
Yep.
Still fun? Still fun?
It is. It is a lot of fun. And I think it gets back to what you were mentioning before about the culture in the company of taking on interesting things. And it's not just about the bottom line. It's also keeping it interesting.
Yeah, and I will say for you as a company, it's been fun just kind of getting to know you. I hope this is not the last time you're on the show. But I just wanted to say again, like the videos and that you have online, they're really helpful, because as the audiences will have seen throughout this episode, as I'm stumbling around through the questions, there's visuals that actually walk you through exactly how everything comes together and in the right application. So whoever put that together for you, good on them, because a lot of companies do not have that sort of stuff. So you're kind of in the dark. How has the show been? Has it been busy?
Yeah, it's been just constant. I mean, majority of this is just seeing our existing customers and other vendors, but we also, we'll see someone you haven't seen in a couple of years, and they'll give you a heads up. Hey, look for us to look you up in a couple months. We have a project. So we learn a lot about the market, mostly, I would say. If we get two new customers, two new projects, that kind of makes the show worth it.
Worth it. And so, just that sort of that ear to the ground and just sort of understanding where people are at. And yeah, no, it was a lot of value out of it. Will both of you be at Mine Expo? That's my next event that I'll be at in person. So we'll actually get to meet in person.
I think so. There'll be some degree of IPI there. We have a booth, but yeah, kind of up in the air who all's going.
Okay. Well, I hope at least one of you is there so we can meet in person. I love doing these interviews, but it's always nice to actually meet people and shake hands. Thank you both for coming on the show, and I look forward to doing it again soon.
Thanks, Jared.
Thank you, Jared.
Thank you, guys.
And thank you, everybody, for watching. Of course, we'll have lots of links to IPI. It's ipipackers.com. Great website to just sort of navigate through. We'll share their LinkedIn, their videos, everything like that that you've seen throughout there. We'll have links to some of that. Thank you, everybody, for watching. We will see you on the next episode of Mining Now.